From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Froneberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. It's such a privilege and honor to have you tuning in to Veterans Radio here from our home station, WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and around the world at veteransradio.net. Hopefully you are listening live. Today's program is about dogs, and I know how all of you love dogs. You love your war dogs. You want to hear their stories, and we're going to get right into that today, and we want you to give us a call if you are a former dog handler or a current dog handler. So the number is 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825, and we want to make sure that you all can participate in that. And right now, I'm going to introduce a new contributor to Veterans Radio, and he is a dog handler, or former dog handler. I guess it's kind of like a Marine. You know, once you're a dog handler, you're always a dog handler. And he is... His name is Alan Belew, and he's a staff sergeant, United States Air Force, retired. And, Alan, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. It's good to be here. Originally from Michigan, was a dog handler for 5 years, a veteran of both Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as some time in Saudi Arabia, Kyrgyzstan. Was an 11-and-a-half-year veteran of the Air Force. And I love these furry little animals. These things are just, these dogs are amazing. And from the experiences that I've had and the experiences from others, we're about to get into some good stuff for the audience, some good information, and hopefully they stick around and we get some callers.
Well, we want you to call in, especially if you're talking about your dogs. Also joining me in the studio right now, for a short period, is another Air Force dog handler from a totally different era, and our good friend Vance McCrum. Vance, welcome. That is the way he always sounds. It signs his emails. Vance was a dog handler in Vietnam, correct? When?
This, 1965.
Okay. And it was amazing to see these two at breakfast suddenly become best friends. Which is kind of interesting, and I know that this happens with veterans when they get together and they find out that they had similar careers. And you guys were talking about the different ways that dogs were trained and how it has evolved. And Vance, I wonder if you could kind of review what you were mentioning about how you trained your dogs, and then Alan, I'll ask you to jump in and talk a little bit about yours.
I've always considered that today's warriors who are dog handlers were I wasn't going to say better trained than we century dog handlers were from the 60s. Just listening to Alan talk about some of the training he's gone through and some of the commands he gave his dog and how his dog responded to him, whereas as a century dog handler who handled always an aggressive dog, the command for them to stop pack is out, and you physically had to choke them off of an attack, whereas these guys, when they give their dog a command, they come to a screech and halt, and that just thoroughly amazes me.
Well, it is kind of cool. So, Vance, I'm going to come back to you real quick. How did you end up being a dog handler?
After I went through basic training, at the time I went through Air Police School, which is now called something Security Forces, and they marched us down to the Lackland Air Force Base to the K-9 section, and a class that was fixing to graduate put on a demonstration. And that just my eyes got as big as half dollars each, and I raised my hand when they asked for volunteers. And there was an interview process. I had to go through a 3-stage interview process to get accepted, and I was one of the fortunate ones that got in. I must have BS'd them pretty good. So I went, you know, for 6 months in Lackland between basic and Air Police School and Sentry Dog School, which was two months.
Okay. And what about your training, Alan? Is it similar to that?
Yes, it was very similar. I went through a similar type of process where I had to get a letter of recommendation from the kennel master, and then my operations officer had to then sign off on a letter, and the whole package goes down to Lackland, and if you're approved, you go off to canine school. If you're not approved, then you stay and you do regular law enforcement or security. Canine school now has block 1, which is all patrol training, and block 2, which is all detection for either explosives or drugs or whatnot. And it's really to train the handlers. The dogs that are down there are so used to the searches, and it's really for the beginning handlers to do. And it was 13 weeks, so it's shorter. It's more compressed, but it's also very, very in-depth. I mean, from we hit the ground running from our ammo cans to day of graduation when we're dog handlers.
Could either one of you want to jump in there and talk about these ammo cans? What are you talking about here?
Well, the ammo cans are funny. When we first get to dog school, our dogs are literally ammo cans. They have leashes, they have collars, they have choke chains.
So it's a fake dog.
Basically, it's a fake dog. And
do they have faces drawn on them in a whole bit, or just an ammo can?
Some people try to get creative with it, and the instructors will let you know if you're not praising your dog in a high enough voice. If you're not doing the wheezy, wheezy, wheezies, then we're going to stay in the ammo can for another week.
Oh, before you graduate to a real dog, you have to get the ammo can to do what you want it to do, right?
Correct, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. It's humorous to me. I was talking about, you know, how you learn your jobs in the service and any place else where you have to do that thing. You know, learning how to fly, I used, you know, toilet plungers stuck to the wall and into the floor pretending they were the controls and how we did those things before they'd let us into an actual real-life helicopter or a real-live dog. So once the ammo can behaves appropriately, I want to make sure that you have, you know, what's going on. So tell me what happens after you do that.
Basically, once we graduate from our ammo cans, we go and get our first dog. And we learn how to take the dogs out of the kennel. We learn how to give the dogs a proper break so they can go potty. And we start going directly into patrol type training, whether it be sending the dog for a bite on a suspect, calling the dog off a bite for a suspect, open area searches if someone's hiding or laying down in a field or hiding in the woods. There's an escort to where the dog will escort a suspect. They'll literally walk to the right or the left of a suspect as they're walking, and any move that the suspect makes that's aggressive, the dog will respond with or without command. And that's the big thing to beware of the military working dogs or any police canine dogs, is those dogs who are trained to attack with or without command. Mm-hmm. So people need to be cognizant of what they're doing around the police or military dogs and how their behavior is.
Okay. Well, I want to make sure we've got a guest on the phone that's calling in, so I want to make sure we get him on the air and we don't lose him. So joining us right now on Veterans Radio is Tac Sergeant Colin Branch. And, Colin, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hi, Dale. Thanks for having me.
Boy, you sound like you're closer than anything else.
No.
It's a great connection. So, Colin, you're obviously another – I'm surrounded by Air Force people here, folks. Got to help me. But I know that you served with Alan in Iraq. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, we have.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about your training as what these people were talking about just now. You went through the same thing. Understand, all the dog training now is done at Lackland. Is that correct?
Yes. All the dogs for all the branches are done at Lackland, as well as other federal agencies, TSA, things like that. And TSA has their own academy, but all the military, we Marines, Navy, Army, Air Force, we're all in one class, like 10 or 12 people, and it's a good mix of all branches.
Well, that sounds really cool. Where are you right now? Where am I talking to you?
Well, right now I'm in Germany just for a few more weeks, and I head back to England. So I'm going to school here, just the NCO Academy, teaching me how to manage my time, I guess.
Yeah, well,
that's a leadership course. You know how it goes.
Okay, and when you were in Iraq, you were and Alan were together, is that true?
Yes, we actually went on missions together, yes.
Okay, why don't you guys talk a little bit about that, and then we'll come back. So tell me what your mission was in Iraq.
Well, they're different depending on who we got attached to. Some missions we'd be out for a week at a time. Some be out for just 8 or 9 hours. It just depends. We usually kind of had a heads up, but mostly our missions were counter IED. Also looking for HBIDs, houseborne IEDs.
Okay.
And things of that nature. And then we even had a sniper incident at one point that we went looking for. I never found them, though.
And then they would also task us out to do raids, cordon and knocks, and also, you know, just sweeping basically they're called snap TCPs, and it's literally like going down I-94, stopping traffic. You cordon off a little area, and the two dog handlers come out, or the one dog handler if you're the only one on the mission, and you go down a line of cars. They let that line through, and then a whole next line of cars come on, and it's in the middle of the freeway.
Middle of the night.
In the day.
So each dog has its own specialty?
It depends
on
what
dog
the dog
systems.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Colin.
Oh, no, it's okay. I'm saying our dogs were both trained the same way. It just so happens. But, yeah, we have drug dogs, bomb dogs, and, of course, you have your tracker dogs as well. I don't know if I heard that program was going away, though, but I can't speak on that.
The tracker dogs?
Yes, sir.
Hmm.
Yeah. And then usually the dogs are dual certified, meaning that they'll be explosive and patrol certified, or narcotics and patrol certified. And patrol certified is essentially the bite aspect of the dog. The building searches, the open area searches. So they're dual certified, and it's one complete package in the dog to go out as a force multiplier.
Okay. So Colin, tell me what your typical mission would have been when you were in Iraq.
Well, one of my more memorable ones, when Alan mentioned the hard knocks, we were out there all night, actually, and they had all these apartment buildings, probably like five or six stories, and just like a block of apartment buildings, and we were there with the Iraqi army working together, and just literally going from door to door, five or six stories, and then hitting the next building. And they weren't nice about it. I mean, they were knocking these doors down because they were looking for people. And we did find some stuff, but amazed me. I don't know how you know about the stamina of dogs. Typically, you know, as humans, we have more stamina than the dogs do. They need more breaks than we do. But I was amazed that my dog just kept going and going. And the next thing I know, we're 3 hours into it, and he hasn't even rested. And he was still ready to go, and he wasn't even tired. I was tired. We stopped because I was tired. And that was one of my memorable moments because Nemo, you know, he would tell me when he was tired. But that night, for some reason, he wasn't tired. We were working, and the apartments were small. We could go in and we'd get the people out, and he'd sweep the rooms, and we'd leave. And Alan mentioned the dogs being a force multiplier. And by that, it's if you take a story building, like a five-story building like that, it would take one person hours to go through it. Whereas it would take a dog maybe 5 or 10 minutes.
So these dogs, as they're going down the hallway, do they kind of stop at a door and give you an indication that there may be something in there, or did you guys bust the door down anyway?
We would have them sniff the doors because they did like to break the door sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And they would indicate whether or not there was anything there, and luckily my dog never did. And I trusted him, so obviously I'm still here. So.
I guess it did work. I want to bring on another caller who happened to serve with Vance, and I've got him on the line. And Ron, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Hello.
Hello. So, Ron, tell me about your dog handler also.
I was one of the first 30 Marine Scout Dog teams to be deployed in 1966.
Okay.
I was stationed at Camp Lejeune, and they asked for volunteers. And all of us volunteered, and the ones that were picked, we really didn't know we were going to Vietnam because all they asked for was volunteers for dog training school, and then at the completion of the dog training school, be assigned to a restricted area. That's all they told us. And, you know, I just assumed it was Vietnam. It was building up. I figured eventually I'm going to be going over there anyway, but why not go with a dog? So I volunteered, and there was a total of 42 of us in our unit, and 30 of us were dog handlers.
Ron, you were a scout dog handler, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, tell me what the difference between a scout dog and a sentry dog.
Well, dog handler would go out with the patrols, and lead the patrols, and hopefully, if you were a good team, your dog would alert on any type of danger, whether it was an enemy ambush, a sniper in a tree, a booby trap, and alert to it before you walked into it. And the sentry dogs, of course, Vance, I believe, was a sentry dog handler.
Correct.
Their job was to secure all the base areas, you know, the high security areas, They'd walk perimeter, protecting the bases, ammo dumps, in the evening. Vance can, probably tell you a lot more about it than I can. But that's what they did. So that was the difference between the two. Sentry dogs were trained to be aggressive, to attack, whereas scout dogs were not. They were more docile. Because we had to work with the troops, and we didn't want them to be biting the other Marines in the unit.
And plus, Ron, your duty was a heck of a lot more dangerous than mine.
I don't know.
With a patrol is, a big bull.
Yeah, it was a little different. Yeah, sure. It's really interesting. You're out there on point. You really don't think about it, how dangerous it is. You're doing your job. You've been trained to do it. And, when it's time to go, you just go and do it. You don't really think about it. You're just concentrating on your dog and, concentrating on him or her to give you the alert in time. So you don't really think about it. And your guys, you're out there walking the perimeter or anything. Look at the story of Nemo. I mean, that could have happened to anyone.
Correct.
You pass along? We're talking about war dogs here on Veterans Radio today, and we're talking with Vietnam era veterans. We've got two Iraq era veterans on hold that we're going to get back to. But tell us a little bit about Nemo, if you could. This is a legend.
Go ahead, Ron.
You want to tell it, Vance?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Nemo was assigned to third class Thornburg, U.S. Air Force. And they were walking their section of the perimeter of the base one evening. And Nemo alerted out into the darkness. And Thornburg looked out there. And all of a sudden he saw 3-4 Viet Cong coming in. They were armed, satchel charges, the whole works. So immediately he started firing at them. And he released Nemo. Nemo went in for the attack. They're firing back. Thornburg gets shot in the shoulder. He goes down, and as he's looking out in the field, he sees Nemo still fighting these Viet Cong, so it gives him enough time to call in for backup. Well, when backup arrived, Thornburg was laying on the ground on his back. He was unconscious. Nemo was laying across his chest, protecting him. The Viet Cong were gone. One of them was dead. And what was amazing about this story is when those first shots rang out, Nemo's right eye was shot out.
Oh,
when in his eye came out, the side of his jaw tore it up pretty bad. But he continued to fight the Viet Cong because that's what he's trained to do. And then once they were gone, then his next job was to come back and protect his partner. And that's exactly what he did. And he was a real hero. He came back to the States as a hero. And I think he lived the rest of his time. It was either at Lackland or one of the other bases. I think they have a memorial now at Lackland Air Force Base
for him.
Yeah. So that was Nemo's story. It's a great story. And it shows you what a dog team is all about. They work together. They fight together. And they could be wounded or die together.
It sounds like a great team. And Ron, I want to thank you for calling in to Veterans Radio. Just pass the word along. Our audiences love the dog stories because they are so courageous, and we live with them every day, and we're not aware.
Everybody's interested in dogs since the Navy SEALs went in with a dog team to get Bin Laden. Everybody heard about Cairo,
mm-hmm.
and that really kind of spread the word around the world because a lot of people still didn't know we had dogs in the military. And once they saw that, then everybody was really interested, and they're still interested in military working dogs.
Right, and there's a lot more acknowledgement of them, as you mentioned, and there are memorials going up around the country. We've got a war dog, Michigan War Dog Memorial just up the road from Ann Arbor here, and I know that there are many more. I saw, doing a little research for the program, that there are a number of different dog handler associations out there. So for some of you that are listening that are dog handlers, you're not, if you're from the Vietnam era, there's a Vietnam Dog Handlers?
Vietnam Dog Handlers Association of America.
Right. And I know there's that one, and then there's one the other one we found was the U.S.
United States War Dogs Association.
Right. So there's all kinds of opportunities for you out there, civilians and military alike, to find out more information. But, Ron, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
My pleasure.
And we're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back in just a little bit. You're listening to Veterans Radio. Give us a call, 877-573-7825. We're talking war dogs, amazing animals, and amazing men. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio live from our flagship station, WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, WMAX 1440 AM in Saginaw, Michigan, WDEO 98.5 FM in Naples, Florida, or find us online at AveMariaRadio.net.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Sergeant First Class Paul Smith gave his life to protect his troops. Details after this.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
On April 4th, 2003, a call went out for a place to put some Iraqi prisoners. Sergeant First Class Paul Smith volunteered to create a holding pen inside a walled courtyard. Soon, Iraqi soldiers, numbering perhaps 100, opened fire on Smith's position. Smith was accompanied by 16 men. Smith called for a Bradley, a tank-like vehicle with a rapid-fire cannon. It arrived and opened up on the Iraqis. The enemy could not advance so long as the Bradley was in position. But then, in a move that baffled and angered Smith's men, the Bradley left. Smith's men, some of whom were wounded, were suddenly vulnerable. Smith could have justifiably ordered his men to withdraw. Smith rejected that option, thinking that abandoning the courtyard would jeopardize about 100 GIs outside, including medics at an aid station. He manned a 50 caliber machine gun atop an abandoned armored personnel carrier and fought off the Iraqis, going through several boxes of ammunition. As the battle wound down, Smith was hit in the head. He died before he could be evacuated from the scene.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and that's the best I could do for Air Force guys. The people we're talking today didn't get up in the air quite often as much as we thought they might, but the dog handlers, we're talking with our newest associate here at Veterans Radio, and his name is Alan Ballou, and Alan is here with his service dog, Bella. I won't bring her on the air. And also joining us on the line from Germany right now is Tech Sergeant Cullen Branch, and Cullen was in Iraq with Alan. And if you've got a question or a comment, you can give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. Colin, before we broke for the Vietnam veterans who Vance had to leave, we were talking about how your dog outperformed you. That's not the right word at all, but you got tired before he did.
That was a surprise, yeah.
How well did the dogs adapt to the climate there in Iraq? And were you in Afghanistan also?
No, I was not in Afghanistan. But each dog's different. They're like people, you know, in that sense. Some are just better shaped than others, and it just depends on their makeup. Nemo, in particular, took about 10 days to acclimatize to Iraq. When we first got there, we did do a couple missions, just, you know, little simple things, and he would get tired pretty quick, you know, because it was really hot, you know. He got tired pretty quick, and then I had to put him up back in the striker or whatever we were riding in that day and give him a break. And then after 20 minutes or so, or whenever I felt he was good, we'd bring him back out again and let him work for a few more minutes. But as time went on, he got better and better. And that night, you know, like, I think it was just the adrenaline in him. And because, I mean, it was – that night was going fast, 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 and it was loud, and, you know, he just stayed amped up. And I think it was like once we stopped for a second, and I was like, man, I'm tired. And my dog, Nemo just kept, he was ready to go. but, yeah, it only took him, a little while to adjust. But once he got adjusted, he was good. And then I did try some different things while we were down there training-wise to see how he'd perform. And Alan and I worked together with his dog as well, just trying to improve them while we were there to improve their stamina and their, you know, detecting abilities as well.
So Alan, what was your dog's name?
My dog's name was Cece. She was a gray sable shepherd, and she was just gorgeous. And Colin hit it on the head there when he said stop for a second. And I'm pretty sure Colin was talking about we get so into our searching because there's so many different things, that, variables, that we have to take an account for.
Mm-hmm.
So it usually isn't until we stop or the dog is has enough to where we're like, okay, wow, I've been searching for 2 hours or 3 hours. And he said it earlier, the dogs do what they're trained to do. There's no extra motivation like we have where it's we're serving our country. For the dogs, mm-hmm. it's all about that reward, and it's all about getting that using their natural instincts of play drive and prey drive to get them to do what we want them to do, i.e. Mm-hmm. find the explosives, the narcotics, things like that.
You were telling us a little story earlier about some of these dogs. I don't know if it was your dog or not, where they would, when you were bringing in a prisoner or a suspected sabotager or whatever you want to call them, that sometimes they would get they would keep the prisoner between you and the dog. The dog would get in front of them. Or you would say, you know, we're going to take a break now or something. They'd go and sit in front of the dog or sit in front of the prisoner.
Basically, if, say, an insurgent or back at a home station, we're doing law enforcement because that's part of the mission. Say someone runs from us. We're saying, halt, 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 stop. They keep running, halt, or I will release the dog. And they keep ignoring. Mm-hmm. Then we release the dog with a simple command of get him.
Get him.
And the dog is running full speed. And if at the last second an insurgent or a suspect or whomever gives up, they throw their hands up, I give up. And then we have to call the dog out. And the dog will literally stop in motion, in pursuit. And Cece would go in front of whomever it was, lay down, and just continue to bark. I forget, Branch, what Nemo did.
Yeah, Nemo was pretty good. Some dogs, they won't bite. They'll just bump the guy, and they'll try to get the guy to hit just so they can get the bite. And some will nudge them. You know, they won't bite them. They'll nudge them with their nose. We call it cheating, you know, because they want the guy to aggress on them so they can get the bite.
Oh.
And,
come
but
on,
Nemo's
come on.
Generally
what are you,
pretty good.
You chicken?
That's basically what
it
is.
Just in trying to antagonize the guy to get him to do something he shouldn't be doing.
What's outstanding about these dogs is it can be annoying, but they are so smart, Dale, that they will sit there and figure out ways not to do the task, creative ways not to do the task, just like that, bumping the person who was getting chased just so that they know if they move, I can get the bite. So they try to bump them to see if they move, and as soon as they move, that's that prey drive, the dead has come alive in the dog's mind, and whoop. If come alive, I can go back and bite it again. And we're like, no, that's not how it works. No.
That's their reward system, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yes.
So you both of you guys, I guess I'll address the question. In addition to searching buildings and so forth, what else did you do with your dogs? Colin, I'll go to you first.
Oh, well, looking for people was another thing we did do at times.
Are we talking here of television type looking for people where you bring out a piece of cloth and they go and try to track the dog or
no? That's the combat tracker dog.
Okay.
They would do something like that. Not quite like that, but basically they give us an area and I'm thinking in training term. I got to think of what happened out there. What happened out there? Hey, we got a sniper. He just took a shot at somebody. We need to go find him. And it's like, all right, cool. And we just go out there and look for him and. We would be up front towards the front of the formation, and once you get to an area or, say, a bombed-out building, you know, we would just go in and sweep the building. And like Alan mentioned earlier, building searches is something else that we do. A dog can clear a building, you know, 10, 20, 30 times faster than a person can. You know, and that's one of the other things they did. That's a whole different command. And we have, so they know I'm searching for somebody or I'm searching for, say, a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they would go in and search the building and clear the building. We did things like that also. And then just normal sweeps, you know, just go out looking for trouble, you know.
I want to remind people, you know, if you're going out looking for a sniper, I would think that the sniper would say, there's a dog looking for me. Let's take the dog out first.
Well, it's funny you mention that. They as an insurgents, definitely knew we were there. And, they're, you know, they did have a price on us. And it was like a bonus for them to shoot a dog.
They did have bounties for the handlers, for a handler's head and a dog's head. Because the dogs are so effective. I mean, they're force multipliers. And what I mean by force multipliers, you take one soldier. Well, you add the dog with the soldier, and you've increased the strength of that soldier 10 times fold because of the abilities of the dog. And these dogs are just so amazing to be able to switch climates to go from stateside to Iraq and do their mission without skipping a beat. And to do it for a Kong and for basically the praise of the handler. So if we're not up to par with our dogs and we're not praising them good enough, then they're not going to perform good enough. And it was always amazing to me to see that.
This is why we need to be really selective at who we pick to work with dogs.
Right. I was just going to go into that. You were mentioning, in fact, Vance was mentioning this earlier when he was talking about the different missions that they had to go on and how you trained your dogs. We're talking about dog handlers here on Veterans Radio today and dogs in general, war dogs specifically. So if you've got a question or comment, give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. You mentioned a word, and I thought you said Kong.
Kong, yes, K-O-N-G.
What is that?
It's a rubber piece.
He's drawing it with his hands here, folks.
I am trying to. It's like an oval and branch. Fill me in if I get stuck. But it's kind of like a oval, hard plastic, chewable,
rubbery toy.
Yeah, rubbery toy. Exactly. And we keep it in our pockets, our cargo pockets, you know. And when the dog finds odor in training, now, the reason I specify training, I'll get to in a second, but when the dog finds odor in training, say it found some C4, well, the dog will respond usually with the sit. That's their alert sit. And then we give the dog the Kong. So the dog immediately smells the odor and gets rewarded with the Kong.
Okay.
Now, in a real world, dog smells odor, sits, we're not going to throw the Kong at him, especially for an explosive dog. but that's what they work for, our praise and that toy. It could be anything. It could be a Frisbee. It could be, I know a lot of civilian police departments use towels, rolled up towels that have been saturated in the scent of whatever it is they're looking for, say narcotics. And so when a dog finds the narcotics, what they do is they give them this towel and they have it in their mouths and it's saturated with the odor. So they're getting praise. They got their, they basically got their toy and their treat. And what it's also doing is it's reminding them, oh yeah, this is the smell I smell when I sit and all this, these good things happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then and like in the real, like Alan was mentioning, the real world stuff is obviously we're not going to throw the Kong for obvious reasons, but when we're pulling the dog, now we have to pull the dog out of the odor to a safe distance. In the meantime, we're praising them up, as we call it, you know, raising their voices like he was doing earlier and giving them good boys and good girls and all that and making them feel good. And then find some safety. And then when it's all said and done, if we have an opportunity, we'll do a quick little training scenario and then pay him with a Kong and just to keep his motivation up, you know.
So did you guys walk around with pockets full of little dog goodies?
No, they were,
we
couldn't do that. The dogs were on strict diets, just ridiculously strict diets.
That's an interesting concept. Now I'm going to ask you that. So what kind of food did they eat while they were there?
Science diet.
Science diet. That's a free ad, folks. I mean, just the regular science diet dog food that you go to whatever the name of the store is and pick it up, or is it
basically at my kennels? Yes, it was science diet, large breed. It depends on the dog too. Some dogs have allergies and they require special food, Colin? I don't know if you have any dogs that...
Some went to Yukonuba or Blue Buffalo or whatever. You know, just depends.
Okay.
And then it would just be the normal...
It was, you mentioned he was really regulated. It was like, we like to keep the dogs a little on the thin side. Not that they're starved by any means, but we try to control their weight just so they can do these jobs that we need them to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why it's strictly regulated.
So when after a dog goes on his mission and comes back and everybody's survived, mm-hmm. do they go to a kennel or did they stay with you?
Well, at Camp Victory, we had our own kennels. If we were lucky enough to come back to Camp Victory, because we literally had our own kennels. I mean, we were segregated from everybody, which was nice. They went back to their kennels and went back to a room. However, I know Alan brought CC into his room a lot. We did have the option to let the dog stay with us in our rooms. If we were out on mission, we stayed wherever we could. A lot of times I shared a room with 30 soldiers, and I had a cot, and Nemo would climb onto the cot with me, and we would literally cuddle and go to sleep. Sometimes we'd sleep on the floor together. He'd just cuddle right up to me, and we'd knock out. I mean, especially if there was nothing else, there was nothing else. But they like for us to stay together as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Alan, I don't know if you have anything to add to that, if you've got something else with that.
Yeah, the camaraderie with the dog and the closest with the dog, especially in a combat environment, I mean, it really, really helps. You know, and it also helps the people that are around, because you got to think, a lot of the units that are going out, yes, they see dogs, but a lot of them are disease-ridden and starved.
Well, I mean, they're wild dogs, stray dogs, too, out there.
Absolutely. They would actually say, oh, it is so good to see a quote-unquote American dog. And it would, like, lift their spirits and their morale really? Up.
How did the dogs react to these strays?
Not very good.
I mean, did they want to eat them, or did they want to, you know, just take them on?
You want to go first, Alan?
They did. Unfortunately, we were authorized to use any means necessary to keep the stray dogs away from the military working dogs.
I mean, many of them are diseased, I'm sure. So.
Yeah, Nemo... You know, I remember Alan, we went together. Nemo didn't pay much mind to them.
I do remember that.
Because they did travel in pack. These dogs in Iraq, I mean, they're not like, just for everyone to know, they're not like mm-hmm. typical dogs that we know. These dogs run in gangs. I mean, like literally street gangs. And they were pretty mean. And one actually attacked Nemo.
Mm-hmm.
And I shot him.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay.
And that's what we're supposed to do. I mean, we're... Mm-hmm. He obviously didn't let him get close enough to make it a close call, but you just knew, it's time to stop this, you know. And then a few more came up, and the soldiers took that cue and started taking care of the rest. I mean, just to keep the dog safe, because dog is priority. But typically Nemo, I considered him a dog fighter. You know, CC, I think, was a dog fighter too, but strangely, those two managed to get along.
That was pretty odd. And it's...
I mean, you've got... What kind of dog was yours, Colin?
Mine was a black and tan shepherd.
Okay.
And he was 85 pounds, and he was gorgeous. And he's actually retired, just so you know. He is retired now with his latest handler, and he's living a good life.
So, I mean, these are pretty large dogs and fairly aggressive. So I was going to wonder, how did they get along? It sounds like they got along okay.
At first, they weren't so sure of each other. I mean, they snap at each other, you know, mm-hmm. growl and talk trash to each other, but... once Alan and I were forced in close quarters together, I don't know if you remember that place. I don't remember the name of that place, Alan, do you? Was it Gazalia or was it?
Gazalia, I do believe.
Yeah, we stayed in a room together. We each had a bunk. You know, they were like, okay, here you go. And Alan's on one end of the room, and Alan's on the other end with CC. And we both want to, at the time, I smoked at the time, and we both want to go out and smoke and... Oh, can't leave our dogs here.
Can't leave them in a room alone, right?
Someone's got to go with us. But, no, they Nemo and CeCe got along really well. After a day or two, they didn't even care about each other. It was fine. And Alan and I had a lot of good laughs at that because they pretty much hated every other dog on the planet.
It's as if those dogs knew. It's as if those two knew, like, well, we have to work together. Our dads are working together, so we might as well make the best of it.
Yeah, that's what we were getting. I mean, the personalities were coming out, and it was quite interesting. And
We got to take a break. We're running up against our clock here a little bit. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want you to, if you could, to share some of these stories about your dogs while they were overseas, and you know, anything else that you can think of that the audience would be interested in learning about war dogs, especially about I want to talk a little bit about the different size of dogs that are being used. So when we come back, we're talking with two Air Force war dog handlers, Tac Sergeant Cullen Branch and Staff Sergeant Alan Ballou, retired. And you're listening to Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio Live on WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, WMAX 1440 AM in Saginaw, Michigan, WDEO 98.5 FM in Naples, Florida, or listen online at AveMariaRadio.net.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu. Or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
It's time to find a job, but where do you start? Why not begin with the U.S. Air Force? We offer comprehensive job training, we help with advanced education costs, and we'll give you real job experience. So if you've got big dreams, let the Air Force help you get them off the ground. For more information, call 1-800-423-USAF or log on at airforce.com. Cross into the blue with the U.S. Air Force. No one comes close.
Back on Veterans Radio, and that was just kind of remind us that there are dog handlers in all branches of the service. And for more information about dog handlers, you can go to the U.S. War Dogs Association. It's great historical information there, the Vietnam dog handlers. And you're going to find out a lot of things about these dogs, amazing, amazing stories that just reverberate from one generation to the other. And I think it's very exciting. Of course, we all love our dogs, and we want to make sure that they're taken care of. So we are talking with Colin Ballou, or not, I got him backwards now, Alan Ballou and Cullen Branch, both Air Force dog handlers. And I asked before we took the break that if you guys could kind of just tell us a little story that could let our audience know, you know, what their dogs did and how important they were to you. If you have a comment here in the last 15 minutes, give us a call at 877-573-7825. And, Alan, I'm going to start with you.
There's so many stories that I could do, but one of them that was when Colin and I were out on a mission. Colin, you remember this night? It was the guy that broke through the cordon.
Yeah.
And we were doing those TCPs, traffic control points, that I was telling you about, and the entire area had been cordoned off by the Army,
mm-hmm.
and we were inside the cordon. And they would bring the vehicles in. That way they were in a secure area for us to search. And during one of the breaks, a guy just tried to come up behind me. And it was like basically at the same time, Colin goes, "Ballou, behind you." And then CC turns around and she's going nuts, absolutely nuts. Well, an Iraqi civilian had happened to break the cordon.
And I was walking.
Walking up towards me, behind me. And Cece turned around. She didn't bite him, but she alerted like she was supposed to. And then I also had my battle buddy Branch alert me I was supposed to. And that could have turned out bad. Who knows what his intentions were. When he was spoken to by the translator, he had said, "Well, I'm just trying to cut through." But...
Not a good idea.
No. But it was definitely something that spooked me, and I was glad I not only had Branch there, but also Cece to alert me and to turn around on her own, mind you, and say, no, who are you? What are you doing here? And you're getting a little too close. Let's figure this out first before I let you any farther.
Okay. Well, that's good. Colin?
Yeah, that was funny. You tell these stories.
You have to be there, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny that, like, Cece and Nemo, like, at the same time, like, it was choreographed or something. Just lunged at this guy, you know, and just started barking away, you know, to stay away. And then, yeah, that same night, Nemo alerted on a car, on the trunk of a car, and mind, it's not like nighttime in, say, Atlanta or Detroit or something. It's dark out there, you know, not many streetlights.
Right.
But he alerted to the trunk of a car, but not the way he would normally alert, you know, if it was, say, an IED or explosive scent or some kind. He lunged at the, not an attack way, but he like, got his nose at the trunk of the car and opened the trunk with his nose. And I'm, like, right behind him, and I see all these eyes looking back at me.
Whoa.
All these faces are staring at me. And this is one of my scarier moments. I, you know, raised my rifle up, and I yelled for Alan. And I, you know, said a few colorful phrases, and I stopped. And, you know, Nemo and I just sat there, and then realized there's a trunk full of kids. I mean, and it's funny, Nemo didn't he didn't react, you know, like I would think he would if he found, you know, say, an adult in there.
So you think he somehow had the innate sense that these were kids and not really too dangerous, but they're still there.
Yes, exactly. And he didn't, you know, people, dogs can pick up on energy. They pick up on vibes. Mm-hmm. They know when somebody's up to no good, you know, and these were just kids just taking a ride in the trunk of a car. You know, I guess the people decided they just were going to ride in the front seat. But
that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that was
kind
quite
of like going
scary
to the drive-in when I was a kid. You know, we'd all sneak into the drive-in, but I don't know. That wouldn't be quite the same story. Were you guys on? You mentioned that you were inside of a cordon of Army. Was it just the two of you, or did you have a lot of Army people walking around kind of to protect you?
They did have a couple. Yeah, we usually. They usually assigned a soldier to us to just watch our backs and let us do our job. And I could just focus on the dog, and the dog could do his job. And, you know, their job was to watch our backs. Yeah, for the most part, they did pretty good.
They usually had about four or five Humvees or what's called MRAPs, the big mine-resistant ambush-proof vehicle, lined up. And we would always go out with a squad or a platoon. And all of the units that we supported were great.
Yeah.
And they made sure to protect us. They made sure that their guys were looking out. Because as dog handlers, we have to constantly look at our dogs and wait for any slightest change of behavior, which it could be an ear flapping, a tail wagging, or simply the dog just turning its head. We'll alert a handler to, okay, I think my dog is on odor. Let me go this way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're walking around and we're looking up trying to find snipers, we could miss a change of behavior and walk right into an IED, and that's the start of a bad day. It was imperative that we have the security.
Yeah.
You were talking before the program about the different way that these dogs are trained. Was most of your work in the urban areas, or were you out in the field also?
Also out in the field. We would basically go in these fields and spread out and walk up as if, you know, walk up in a line as if we're searching for, say, a missing child, how people walk up in lines. And we would do it like that, and the dog would be out up ahead a little bit. And I'm looking at the dogs, change of behavior. Colin's looking at the dogs, change of behavior. We have our counterparts behind us telling us, hey, that looks suspicious up here, or on the left, that looks a little suspicious. What do you think? And
yeah,
were the dogs leashed, or are they loose?
Leashed. Here's a good story for you. we generally kept them on leash for obvious reasons outside. When we got to certain, I'd say for me personally, we were probably 70% urban, 30% out in the field. We were in a warehouse, and it was a carpet warehouse, and it was just mountains and mountains and these big rolls of carpet. And they're just, you know, looking for stuff. And so I thought, okay, it's pretty safe, nothing out here, and nothing in here. And I let him off the leash because Nemo would work better off the leash. He was more efficient that way. He wasn't as lazy about it, I guess you could say. But he was quartering all these rolls of carpet, and he alerted to something, and it went straight forward. And I thought he'd found something. I was like, hey, guys, you found something. And nope, the cat comes flying out from behind the carpet.
he found lunch.
Yeah. Luckily, I lost him. You know, no, he actually listened to me. He came back to me, but that was, yeah.
Well, we've got about 7 minutes or so to go. Can you tell me some of the other things that these dogs do? I mean, we were talking earlier about the different size dogs. All the branches of the military have their own military working dogs, and you were telling a story about how some of the dogs now are equipped with monitors so that they can hear commands.
Yes, I was talking about the specialized search dogs, their acronym SSDs. Are those still being used, Colin?
I don't know. I imagine they put a lot into that program. I don't see them. I'd have to ask for you. I could get back and find out for you later.
And basically, those dogs... the handlers would have walkie-talkies, and the dog would have a speaker, and the handler would talk into the walkie-talkie and give the directional commands left, right, in conjunction with hand and arm signals. And these dogs would go out, I think it was like 200-300 yards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was far.
Wow.
To way up ahead to locate explosives. These dogs, the SSD dogs, weren't patrol certified, though.
They're mainly Labradors, too.
Mm-hmm.
So do different dogs have their own specialties?
Well, Labradors have a really good sense of smell. You know, not very aggressive, but their noses tend to work better than some other breeds like Shepherds and Mals. You know, and that's why they're used for SSDs, because they're very, very great at detection.
Mm-hmm. So these would go out and they would just kind of talk to them. Mm-hmm. Say, go to the right, go to the left.
Oh, yeah. Come, sit, stay. All the commands, but just through a walkie-talkie.
That's kind of cool. I wish I'd had that with my real dog.
Yeah.
just to get her to sit would be a big surprise. anyway, and some of the other brands, we talked earlier about the Navy has these sentry dogs or dogs on their ships.
Yeah.
For submarines, they use beagles, don't they?
Submarines?
You got to think practical, you know. I mean, can you fit a German Shepherd in a sub? I mean, is it really practical? that's what they said to me.
I understand that because, again, reading the history from the U.S. War Dogs website, they were talking about the different sized dogs because they could get into these places. You know, they would, starting in World War II and around even some of the not the auto plants, but the airplane factories, they had dogs that would go in and out of the airplanes to look and see if somebody had sabotaged them. And they would use these little, you know, little Chihuahua-type dogs along with the Beagles and so forth. I think it's a great story, and I didn't realize how big – how many war dogs do you think there are out there?
Well, I know the U.S. War Dogs Association, they have their Operation Military Care Canine that provides packages to military working dog teams deployed all across the world, and they estimate that there's about 5,000 military working dog and handler teams worldwide deployed right now.
Now, again, for our audience, this is some way, if you want to help out these dogs and these dog handlers, you can go to that website, to the U.S. War Dog Association.com, and you can send a care package to the dog. I think that's cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Did you receive any care packages while you were overseas?
Oh, yes. We get, I think it was like almost biweekly, we would get packages and Kongs and snacks and treats, and it would be like Christmas.
Yeah.
Especially for the dogs, too, because they're getting new toys. They're sick of their old toys, and they're getting new ones. and Operation Military Care Canine is really, really doing well, and it helps so many of these dog teams out because you got to think, like, deploying out, it's just the dog and the handler. That's it. You go on and you get on the plane and you go and you land, you're with the Army, and you're feeling kind of alienated until you meet someone with your own branch. But the Operation Military Care Canine, I mean, they deliver care packages, medical supplies, equipment, and comfort items that are shipped overseas.
That's amazing. In fact, I was going to ask that question. So you guys are pretty much contract employees. You would go out and work for the different branches. You weren't necessarily always at an Air Force base. You would go work with the Army or the Marines or, you know, some special forces unit, you know, that needed you.
Basically, yeah. I know a lot of dog handlers that were with special forces. Branch and I, we were, before we went to Iraq, we were trained by the Marines at Yuma, Arizona. That was the hardest training that I have ever been through in my entire 11.5-year career. But it prepared us very well for our combat missions and combat roles in Iraq.
I know. I've seen the pictures of some of the special forces with the dogs and the special forces guy jumping out of a very good airplane. Was mentioned earlier in the program about the Navy SEALs taking along, war dogs with them on their mission to get Bin Laden. So we got about 2 minutes left. So I'm going to ask each one of you to kind of sum up your feelings about your dogs, and you know what they mean to you now and what they mean to the military. So I'll give you a minute each. Go.
Well, the dogs to me, they are my life. Bella, my service dog, she goes with me everywhere, as you know. It's difficult being on this side because it's my dog handling days have been over for a while, but the dogs save lives. They've saved my life. They've saved Cullen's life and a lot of other lives. And you get really attached. You get really close, and you never forget them. Not a day goes by that I don't think about my dogs.
Yep. Cullen?
Yeah, same here. I think about Nemo all the time. He was my favorite because we went to Iraq together. I've only handled like maybe 6 dogs total, but he was absolutely my favorite. And I don't handle dogs anymore for the Air Force, anyways. Now my wife and I we bought a Great Dane last year. We've been raising him, and you know, he's a big cuddle bug too.
I was gonna say you just went bigger.
yeah, and he I love him to death. They're comfort for us, and like Alan mentioned earlier, they raised the morale of the units we worked with, and that was huge. I mean, for me personally, it would have been a whole different deployment without a dog. Whole different deployment.
I can only imagine.
It made the deployment go by much, much easier for me personally.
Well, Colin, I want to thank you so very much for calling in from Germany for this whole time period. And Alan, you want to say something to him?
Yes, Colin. Thank you for calling in. Very much appreciated, buddy.
Yeah, sure thing. And Dale, I just want to say, your fellow Vietnam veterans, you guys did your part when the popular thing to do was to tear up your Selective Service card and defect to Canada. But you guys did what you were supposed to do and did it for your country. And I really appreciate your service back then. I really admire you guys. And thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. And I admire you just as much.
Right,
good to have a mutual admiration society going. thanks very much. Well, Alan, you did it. You made it through your first program, and we're going to be having Alan will be putting together some more programs for us. He'll be talking about the Veterans Court in a couple of weeks, local, to help out the veterans. Bob Gould will be back next week. We're going to be talking about jobs, I think it is. Until then, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.